to, but that's what I'm here to do, so I'll do it. Please raise your hands if you cannot hear me. So, I have been asked to speak a little bit about free software before my main speech, which is about software idea patents. Now, free software should be translated as subway, not, you know, I don't remember how to say zero price. The point is that the issue is not about price at all. It's about freedom. Free software is software that you can use in freedom, software that respects the user's freedom. Typically, when software is made available to the public, it is proprietary software, user-subjugating software. In order to use it, you are supposed to accept conditions that are ethically intolerable. For instance, they keep the users divided and helpless. Divided because you're forbidden to share it with anyone else. And helpless because you can't get the source code, so you can't change it or even see for certain what it does. Free software means that you have four specific freedoms. Freedom zero is the freedom to run the program however you wish, for any purpose that is in itself legitimate. Freedom one is the freedom to help yourself, the freedom to study the source code and then change it to do what you want, so that you, instead of the software developer, have control over your computer. Freedom two is the freedom to help your neighbor, the freedom to distribute copies to others. This is the freedom to be a good citizen, to be a good member of society, helping other people. And freedom three is the freedom to help build your community, the freedom to publish a modified version so that other people can get the benefit of your changes. Freedom three makes it possible for us to work together to change the software to do what we want. With freedom one, you personally can change the software to do what you want. And that's essential, but it's not enough. Why is it not enough? First of all, there are millions of people who use computers and don't know how to program. For them, freedom one is not very useful. For them personally, they personally are not going to change the software. And second, even for us programmers, freedom one is not enough because there's too much software. And if we were each limited to the changes, you know, if I were limited to the changes I personally could make, I wouldn't have enough time to read all that source code and master all of those programs and make all the changes I want myself. The only way we can really take control of our software is if we work together. Whenever we share a common interest in how to change the software, we are free to work together. That's what Freedom 3 does. Because whoever makes a change can publish the change version, and all the others who agree that that's a good change can use it. And they don't have to know how to program. They just have to know there are two versions and decide which one they like better. So in this way, even the people who don't know how to program get some control over what their software is going to do. And if they want to go to the trouble, if they really care, a group of people who don't know how to program can form an organization, and they each put in some money. And then the organization pays programmers to make the changes they want. So even if none of them knows how to program, they can still use Freedom 1, 2, and 3 together so that collectively they pay for the changes they want. And if the first programming company they go to says, we won't do this job for that amount of money, or we're busy, or it'll take us a year, these users can ask another company, how long will you take to do this job, and how much will you charge? which illustrates the fact that free software means there is a free market for all kinds of support. Support for a proprietary program is a monopoly because only the developers have the source code, so only the developers can change it. That's why the support for proprietary software is usually so bad, because you're stuck with only one developer who can do it. And if there is a choice of proprietary, non-free programs to do a job, paradoxically, this is a choice between monopolies, because for each program, the support is a monopoly. If you choose this program, you're choosing this monopoly for support. If you choose this program, you're choosing this monopoly for support. And if you choose this program, you're choosing this monopoly for support. So you have a choice of which monopoly it's going to be. But no matter what you choose, it's going to be a monopoly. So what you have here is a chance to choose your master. And this shows the difference between choosing your master and freedom. Freedom is more than just having a discrete set of listed choices. Freedom is being in control of your own activities and your own destiny. And only free software makes it possible for computer users to do their activities in freedom. A non-free program is non-free because it takes away your freedom. It doesn't respect these four essential freedoms. So this is the reason for the free software movement. In the early 80s, I was thinking about these issues. I hadn't completely worked them out yet, but I realized that I wanted to use a computer in freedom, and that the existing operating systems did not allow this. All of the existing operating systems for modern computers at that time were proprietary. And in order to get them, you had to sign a license promising not to share with anybody. And as an ordinary user, you had no hope of getting the source code. The result was to use a computer meant to be divided and helpless. And most computer users didn't know it could be any other way. This was the only way they had ever seen. But I had seen another way. I had lived in a community of free software users, of programmers who cooperated, who shared their software, and I shared my software. So I knew that there was a better way, and I knew that it was good. So I decided I was going to change things. Now, being just one man, I couldn't change things by convincing a government to change laws. And I couldn't convince the corporations to change their policies. They wouldn't listen to me, and I knew that, so I didn't even try. Instead, I tried using the skill that I was good at, which is writing software. I realized that I could change the situation, not by persuading specific other people, but by saying, I'm just going to ignore them. I'm going to write my own operating system, and I'm going to say, this one you are free to share and change. So if those other developers won't treat us right, just forget them. Don't use their software. Ignore them. Pretend they don't exist. And we'll develop and use free software, and that way we can live in freedom. That's what the free software movement has done for over 20 years now. We have developed a free operating system and lots of other free software, and now you can do most of the things you want to do with a computer, and there's no need to give up your freedom to do them. This is because of many years of work, specifically so that we can live in freedom. In January 1984, I began developing the free software operating system called GNU. The name GNU is a joke. It stands for GNU's not Unix. So it's a recursive acronym. Sometimes people don't get that. They say, but what does the G stand for? And I say, it stands for GNU. But what does the G stand for? They can go through the recursion any number of times if they don't understand. But there's another reason why I chose the name GNU. mean, I could have called it Pnu or Pnu or Pnu, but those are not words. The word Gnu has been used for lots of wordplay for a long time, so it's the perfect name for anything. Once I saw that the name Gnu would work, I didn't consider any others. The reason it's used for so much joking is, according to the dictionary, it's pronounced new. So people started asking each other, hey, what's new? But now there's a different answer. Now you can answer them, GNU is not Unix. And the best part is, it sounds like you're being obnoxious and refusing to tell them what it is, and instead you're telling them what it's not. But in fact, you are telling them exactly what it is. However, when it's the name of this operating system, please do not obey the dictionary. If you talk about the new operating system, you'll get people very confused. We've been working on it for 20 years now, so it's not new anymore. But it still is GNU, and it always will be GNU, no matter how many people call it Linux by mistake. And that particular mistake is common. I'm sure you've heard people talking about the GNU system and calling it Linux. Most of the users are confused. Most of the users think the system is Linux. Most of them think it was started in 1991, which is not true. And most of them think it was started by Linus Torvalds, which is not true. What Linus Torvalds did in 1991 was he wrote a kernel. And that kernel filled the last gap in the GNU system, which at that time was almost finished. The kernel was all that was missing. So when Linus Torvalds wrote a kernel and released it as Linux, and then when he changed the license and made it free software, it was possible for people to combine his kernel and the almost complete GNU system to make a complete system. And that system, which is GNU with Linux added, is the system that became popular in the 1990s. When people talk about a Linux operating system, that's what they actually mean. It's the GNU system with Linux in use as the kernel. So, having developed that system, we needed to do more work. You see, in 1983, when I announced the plan to develop GNU, I decided to make a Unix-like operating system. That's what the name GNU's not Unix means. It's a way of giving credit to Unix while saying that this is not the same system as Unix. It's a different system. But it's a Unix-like system, which meant that in the early 90s, the way you used it was from the command line. It was as powerful as Unix and as easy to learn as Unix, which means not easy enough. So we needed to develop graphical user interfaces, and I knew that all along. In fact, our first attempt to develop a graphical user interface desktop was in 1990. But it was only in 1997 that our third attempt really got started. That's GNOME, the GNU desktop. And today, with GNOME working well, the result is that we have a free operating system that is easy for beginners to use. According to some trials in Italy, people with no experience can learn to use GNU with GNOME faster than they can learn to use Microsoft Windows.